before beginning, does anybody in here know how to build a fire here? For many of you, we had an enormous turnover here in the village. Lots of new arrivals the past 3 days. And so we have a kind of a new village as compared to the village last week. So for some of you, this is your first forum of this year. For some of you, your first forum ever at Holden Village. So let me first introduce myself and my co-panelist, our nurse, Jane Van Dusen. My name is Mark Schwain, and I'm currently known as the village philosopher. I hope that's not too formidable a term. As I explained to some of you during orientation, I simply try to facilitate conversation about issues of various sorts, and so I'm more of a sort of facilitator, moderator, than I am the kind of person that goes around philosophizing and behaving strangely in other ways. One of the things that I do is to convene these meetings known as forums, and that's what I'm doing at present. The forums, let me just tell you a little bit about them so that those of you who are here for the first time will feel comfortable quickly. Forums are times where we share opinions, views, sometimes well-reasoned, sometimes not so well-reasoned convictions about all sorts of matters that impinge very deeply upon our lives. Therefore, the moderators of forums are best advised to get on with what they have to say and let folks here do the talking. I'll try to honor that precept. This week's two forums, one on Monday and one on Thursday, the first forum and the last forum of the week, deal with issues of life and death, birth and death. We're starting, appropriately enough, here on Monday with the responsibilities that we have, if we do in fact have some, to the unborn, and then on Thursday, can we die our own death? Therefore, these issues, I think, are, compared to other forum issues, a bit more deeply personal and somewhat more solemn and serious than others. Not to say that most forum issues aren't in their own way serious, but it's for that reason that I guess we all owe one another, since we come here, I think, with deeply held views, some rather complicated and deeply emotionally experiences. And so we feel very deeply about these matters in one way or another, and therefore owe, I think, one another an especial amount of sensitivity and care in taking heed to what each other says and in responding in kind once the conversation is underway. I will just say a few things to start matters off this evening, and then Jane will also say a few things, and we'll be on our way. And what I would like to just talk about briefly is to try to figure out why it is that matters like... are you the expert fire starter?
No.
You're just bringing wood in, or...
No, I just have a fire.
Oh, terrific. Oh. Terrific.
Trying to build.
Three log limit, right. Yeah. Are to try to figure out why it is that all of us feel so perplexed in the face of tonight's question, namely, what are the nature of our responsibilities to the unborn? Why is this such a complicated public issue? Why is it such a complicated personal issue? Why do we feel variously at sea over the matter? I would suggest, first of all, that it's one of those matters which cuts very close to the bone, that is, which all of us at one time or another have had to face personally, either in our own biological lives. Men are somehow exempt from having to face the issue of abortion directly in their own personal lives, and Jane will speak to that problem in a moment, or through friends, spouses, loved ones, daughters, whatever. And a second reason is that many of the oracles to which we traditionally appeal, scriptures, favorite moral principles, and so on, when we get to the issue of abortion, don't give us as much explicit and unequivocal guidance as we'd like. And very quickly, third, the issue of abortion and the issue Thursday, can we die our own death, force us to reconsider the whole nature and purpose and meaning of human life. That is, what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to have a self? What does it mean to be a person? When does that personhood or selfhood or human life begin? When exactly does it end? And who, if not ourselves, is going to be permitted to define those kinds of issues? Are we going to let the courts decide them? Are we going to let the medical profession decide them? Are we going to appeal to theologians, ethicists, new technologies? How do we determine exactly if we have a strong moral intuition and a strong moral imperative against killing, thou shalt not kill, but how are we going to determine to exactly at exactly what point this strong injunction applies? And our reasoning there becomes instantly clouded by the fact that we don't exactly know, in the case of abortion, many of us, at what exact point it is that life, as we understand human life, begins. And we're very quickly hamstrung by that issue. Let me conclude my explorations of why it's a difficult matter by just touching on the instant complexities we get into as soon as we talk about the ethics of abortion. One strongly held view, one widely held view, is that abortion is, except for specially urgent situations affecting the health of the mother and or under circumstances of rape, except for those two cases, abortion is always wrong. It's always wrong. Why? Because it's always taking human life. This is one position. And that position would, if we take a line like so, this X representing conception, and this representing birth, persons holding this view would say, the point on this line at which we have a genuinely new reality, a genuinely new creation, is right here. The union of a sperm and an egg, where there is now some new reality that's greater than the sum of those two parts. And that any deliberate interference so as to terminate the life of that zygote is to commit a wrong. Some would call it murder. Some would call it a moral wrong of some sort. But some folks would say this is the problem right here. This is the place where one commits an injustice, a wrong. And there's a certain appeal to that view. On the side of that view, it seems to me, or first of all, that it's sort of tidy because it's so absolute. It spares one from having to draw some other point on this line, like at the moment we get a heartbeat, or at the moment that the fetus can live outside of the woman's body, or some other such point where we're going to say, well, we've crossed a vital threshold from something that's not quite human to something that's fully human, whatnot. It spares us that kind if we suddenly say, conception, there is some new reality that we dare not tamper with. So that's a kind of an appeal. It also kind of suggests, has the appeal of its being a kind of reverence for all forms of life, whether fully human or not. It's a strong moral intuition, a widely held view. What are the difficulties with the view? Well, it surprisingly enough goes against some of our moral intuitions to hold this view, because we very quickly realize that if we want to argue that to abort a fetus very early, let's say very shortly after conception, is to commit a deep moral wrong, we are forced into other positions in order to be consistent that we feel uncomfortable with. For example, just to list two, what do we do about IUD, a very widespread form of birth control? One theory of how IUDs work is that they prevent implantation in the uterine wall, and that one already has a fertilized egg, and that that fertilized egg is simply, because it's unable to attach itself, aborted. If we want to consider that a kind of a kind of killing and hence a moral wrong, we have going around, as we sit here, hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of these moral indiscretions during the course of the forum. And I don't know whether we want to adopt that view or not. Another problem, a new medical technology which you've read about in the paper, the test tube baby, and in vitro fertilization, that is extrauterine fertilization and then implantation in the uterus, is going to raise colossal moral issues. Because how is that done? What is the actual procedure? It's not as though one egg cell is unified with one sperm cell and then that's implanted in the uterus, no. Several egg cells are fertilized with several sperm, and then one of those is implanted in the uterus. What's done then with all of these other fertilized eggs, all of these other things at the first part? What's done with them? Well, they're discarded. I think we ought to feel uncomfortable with the notion that the people who do that are somehow mass murderers. But as a matter of fact, we would be forced into that position if we want to claim that anyone who interferes with a fertilized zygote is such a person. So that's a problem. And furthermore, the way that we treat fetuses along the course of this spectrum suggests that really our deepest moral intuition suggests that they aren't somehow fully human. For instance, when someone who has been born dies, we typically hold Christian burial for them. We have a kind of grieving for them that's somehow very prolonged. Family members are called in, so on. This is not the way we typically behave when we experience miscarriages. We do not seek to bury the remains, perform Christian services over the remains, etc., etc. So just in our own behavior, it doesn't seem that in all respects we are prepared to suggest that we have a full-fledged human being here and that abortion is a form of murder. So anyway, that's just to locate the whole abortion issue at one point here. Some people would say, well, it's okay up to this point. Some it's okay up to this point. Then it becomes a problem, etc. But you can see how at every point one's going to be immediately thrust into new definitions of what is the meaning of human life. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be an embodied spirit? When and how does that happen? Is our life simply a biology? Or is it kind of a spiritual existence that must include consciousness and psyche? These are the kinds of things that will surface invariably in our conversation and the kind of things that make this issue extremely complicated. I think we're going to have to struggle together with it, and I'm eager to struggle with you, and I'd like to turn over the rest of the opening remarks to Jane and then get underway.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what comes to my mind as a woman when the subject of abortion is brought up. First of all, I'd like to say that the word abortion is not a pleasant word. I can't think of anything pleasant that goes along with it, anything immediately good about it. The word is harsh, it's abrupt. A clinic that I'm familiar with in Minneapolis uses the term VIP. They call it a voluntary interruption of pregnancy, which I think really speaks to exactly what's going on, and for me it's a little more palatable. I think any woman of childbearing age really owes it to herself to give abortion some thought. They're not just done in cases of unmarried pregnant teenagers, unmarried women of any age. There are things like rape, incest, when there has been determined to be some fetal abnormalities. Abortions are done under these circumstances, and I think that it can involve any woman, and that's why we owe it to ourselves to stop and think about it, think about how we feel, how we would feel, knowing that there's potential for all of us, though it's not a planned, positive part of any woman's life, any of these things that I mentioned. For me, it's a really confusing issue. It's about the simplest way I can put it. I have wholeheartedly supported patients and friends through the experience, just because I feel that the temporary mental anguish, and not to say that it's over and done with and that's all there is to it, because that's not it by any means, but I feel that that definitely outweighs the lifelong consequences and immediate altering of the woman's lifestyle that would happen if she would choose to continue this pregnancy. Yet when I plug myself into the situation, it's a whole different thing. I'm a very sensitive person, very concerned with life and living, and the thought of removing and destroying a living part of my living being just immediately brings to me an indescribable sense of distress. And a few of the first words that came to my mind, or that come to my mind when I'm involved with people going through this, are pain, sorrow, loneliness, and just a feeling, in terms of thinking of myself, of distress that I just can hardly put into words. I think one really important thing, or the most important thing for a woman who is pregnant, does not want to be pregnant, to do is to get in touch with someone who is emotionally uninvolved, non-judgmental, and non-moralistic in regards to the issue. That's
thank
all
you.
I have to say.
Thank you. I think the last point is well taken, especially in terms of the advice of seeking counsel from someone of the sort that Jane described, because the final thing that makes the issues tonight and the issue Thursday the most difficult is that we have this paradox that those issues that require the deepest and most careful sort of ethical and spiritual detachment and reflection are the very issues that we only face under the most trying of emotional circumstances. That is, not in circumstances like we're enjoying at the present time, in front of a fire and with friends and have a chance to reflect carefully. It's in exactly those urgent moments when a loved one or we ourselves are facing death and or this whole other issue for this evening that we have to make a choice. And so that kind of counsel, it seems to me, is imperative for all of us. Okay, it's open. Responses of any sort.
You were mentioning we don't have a Christian burial usually for a child or a baby that's a stillborn child. In my family, we have a stillborn child. We do not have. But there are states, I think, that require a burial after 7 months. I had a friend who's this is years ago. I don't. Anybody from Iowa here?
Yes.
Isn't there a rule that you have a burial?
Yes, we do. 7 months.
Yeah. I don't think that's true in most states. In other words, you have to not necessarily a Christian burial, but you have a.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a Christian burial.
No.
But it does have to be a burial. It is below that. The fetus can go to the university hospitals. Or
yeah, that's what our doctor suggested to us. A stillborn child. Yeah. Or,
a stillborn full term?
No.
Oh, okay.
24 to 28 weeks. I can't remember. It's the first one.
Do you know the specific criteria on the basis of which, say, after 7 months, as opposed to, let's say, after 4 or 5?
Yeah. 7 months.
But you don't know why it's 7. You,
no.
As opposed to 6 or 8 or.
That's a big chance of surviving.
Is that correct? If I could ask you, John, that it's 7 months that the baby is that the about the time that it could live independently from mother's body? Or is it earlier?
Oh, it's much earlier. Probably a little earlier that it could live independently, but different states have adopted different rules which have been subjected to political process, which I think takes them out of perhaps what we're talking about tonight. The state of Oregon has any fetus over 5 months
mm-hmm.
must go for burial. I might say that that my experience with people undergoing a miscarriage prior to the time that the baby is viable, prior to the time that we can, in a medical sense, pull out the stops and do everything we can, have gone through the loss and grieving reaction. And I think it's just as much in terms of what we hold in our own hearts as the potential for that child, all that it might have been, that we're losing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very real thing, and my experience undergoes the same mechanism as a grief reaction of loss of someone that's in our family or close to us.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Wordsworth's poem, "We Are Seven"?
Pardon?
"We Are Seven."
The person speaking said, "We are seven." Oh, so how many children? Well, only four living. We are seven. I, the mother, the one that died.
Mm-hmm.
Was the recognition this was a part of the family. That wasn't necessarily a premature, as an indicator.
No, because it is, as Jane said, it's a part of you. Something created through the humanness of yourself, implanted in you, and just the thought, the whole thought of killing that is just the most distressful, the most unique feeling that a woman could ever feel. And I myself have never had to deal with a situation, but I've had friends who've come to me and asked me, "Molly, what should I do? You know, I'm pregnant, I can't have this child." And it's real hard for me because I always had a stand up. I was against abortions. It's all there was to it, I was against it. Until this friend came to me and said, "I'm in trouble." And then it's a total different situation when you're starting, when you get involved, because you see what it could do to this person to have the child. You can see what it would do to the person to not have the child and to get the abortion. So it is really a personal thing. I really feel strongly that it's a personal decision. Nobody can make it for you. I don't feel that the church can make it for you. I don't feel that the government can make it for you, as much as we'd like to have them do so at times, because it does take the decision away from us. But it's a just the feeling of, you know, it's real heavy when you think, "Hey, I could be a mother." And then all of a sudden to think, "Hey, I could kill this and go on living my life." Then you wonder how you live it. It's real debatable. That's my view.
A lot of times people only look at the one side of destroying the potential life. And to me, there's a very real other side that says, if I continue that life, what do I have to offer it? Just bringing a baby into existence is not enough.
Yeah.
That's not maintaining life. That's not giving it support. That's not showing God's love, unless you can continue to support it in a kind of a life that will be constructive. And I guess I feel very close to little children because I work with them all the time, and I find it just as wrenching to see the lives of 2 and 3 year olds being destroyed where they're not wanted. And it almost sometimes seems a lot better to me to say, okay, we're not going to hurt that child that way, because it's not going to have a good home. Which is not to say either that all aborted children would be misused children.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's the other side of what kind of life would be offered.
More abortions among the well-to-do, middle class, there are among poor people.
There's a lot of abuse among the well-to-do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can carry that concept even further. You were talking about how it affects the child that was aborted. Now, if you go, say, into India or places of that type of population problem, the issue becomes wider because an abortion may not only... the child would suffer, perhaps, most probably would, but then so would the other members of its family. So the issue can become wider there.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's seen, when you're talking about it, though, as selfishness on the part of the potential parent, to say, you know, well, I don't want this kid. And I'm sure that's part of it at times. But to me, the more real threat is to that new life.
There's always the alternative of, well, it's so hard to say, but if there's always the alternative of the woman saying, I'll have the child and give it up for adoption, which I think, I'm for it all the way because I'm adopted and I have no other parents than the parents I have right now. As far as I'm concerned, I'm very strong about that. But then of course, then it goes back to the woman deciding, do I want to spend 9 months out of my life and then just give the child away? So I guess you've got to work with that too. But so that's an alternative to abortion, is adoption, to have the child, to give the life, and to give it to somebody else.
A little different tack in terms of timing. It seems to me that if the possibility of children is something that you've chosen by lifestyle, that you know, you have to be responsible about contraception, and you have to be responsible in terms of if you know, being aware of your body and being aware that if you need to have an abortion, then it seems to be a much more defensible position early in the game. And I think that abortion is badly misused when it's used as an alternative to responsible contraception. And I think that that isn't widely practiced, but it's much more palatable to me than it takes place in the first 3 months when people make that decision early on. And if I jump from something,
yes.
I'd like to enlarge on a couple of comments that she made, which I believe you said that it should not be, the decision should not be something either legislated, I think you intended to say, by the church or by the government or even by any other structure in the community.
Thank you.
I don't want to disagree with that. Cannot raise that child alone, even if she has sufficient financial means. She has to have a community to help her raise the child and for the child to grow up in. So if she's making a mature decision at all, I guess she needs to think of us, of us, the rest of the community, not in terms of what is legislated, but perhaps something which is supposedly not done in our society. What is not best, not just for I, the mother, or he, the child, but what is best for the community? The church in generations gone by has exerted pressure, some of it exceedingly destructive, but some of it also exceedingly helpful. The same goes for some governing units also. And I think usually, not always, but most often when this pressure was helpful, it's because the welfare of the community, which includes the welfare of all members, was taken into consideration. And then when I was listening to the second girl, and I'm totally a different generation from her, I'm uncomfortable in this sense. And I have two daughters who are in their 20s of my own, so that I and my husband live with this attitude day by day, though we do not like it. We know that in their generation, living together or just simply living together as friends on a very brief basis is, I guess I am correct in saying, far more widely accepted than in my generation. There are all kinds of arguments. I guess arguments really don't pertain to that. I guess my feeling, and it is only a feeling, over against my daughters is this. I think my daughters have had, and they and their friends that we have watched closely, have a more difficult time making a life of their own, and this is broader, I realize, than just the children they will bring into the world, but it is all intertwined. They're having a more difficult time because when I was their age, there was really very little choice. Most did not. We simply accepted that someday someone would ask us to marry them, we would get married, we'd have a family, and for the bulk of the people, I knew that was so. There were really, for all practical purposes, no other choices around us. Now, my daughters, and you who are in their age bracket, have, I think, a great many more difficulties than we ever did. What if you are like my younger daughter, who at 25, I think, is unmarried and would like a home and a family, but she is caught in this bind that is apparently not what most, the boy or two whom she deeply cared for wanted. So what does a girl in that situation do? You know, I think that brings pressures to bear upon her that we didn't have to contend with. But I also think that we adults, as a church, as a government, as social communities, are not giving any support or any guidelines. We're not even saying, we don't say to, I know, our daughters know how we feel, but we long since have given up saying to them in black and white words, you know, this is the way we think it would be, because we can't any longer. The world they live in is different from ours, but I feel sorry for them.
It's really hard. It's sometimes very, very hard when all your life you've been told, you know, you'll grow up, you'll get married, and you'll live happily ever after, and you have five kids or something. I don't want that. You know, personally, I don't want that, but then on deep down, but then on the other hand, there's something inside of me that does, to be honest about it. But I think it's only because all my life, that is what, you know, through school, that's what the ideal situation was, to grow up, to go to high school, and maybe go to college, and to find a man, and then get married with a big church wedding, and settle down in a house in suburbia, and live happily ever after. But getting back to the point of, there really are no guidelines. We have so many choices to choose from now, as women and as men, and we're struggling. We're trying to find a way of our own. And that's where, you know, we make mistakes, and that's why abortion's such an issue, because it's a new thing for us. And birth control and all that is a new thing for us. And new relationships with men and women. Starting something brand new. And it'll be neat to see in how many ever years when, you know, children, if we ever have children. But, you know, our children's children and so on, and the next generations, it'll be really neat to see what they go through, to see what guidelines that we set up for them, because we're setting guidelines now, whether we realize it or not. We're making new ones.
I don't know whether we realize or not, the guidelines are almost set by the government insofar as Medicare, when what, in 73 it was provided for the abortions, when it was taken away, the abortions went down almost to nil, at least legal. And I assume that because after all, many of those could not even afford the illegal. And so the guidelines really are legislature. There we are now. How many of us trying, you know, stimulate, fight, whatever for, in some respects, that was the answer right there. Because those abortions could not be performed unless they were paid for. And your doctors are not going to do them unless they are reimbursed to the clinics.
And what about church bodies, just for the record? Haven't church bodies taken official positions on the abortion question? I mean Lutheran church bodies.
Can I say, in fairness, that my opinion is that they haven't been well publicized. Now, I understood, didn't the ALC and Jim Buck, 2 years ago he was here. Yes, he mentioned that he had helped draft a position paper on abortion for the ALC. But it has not, I don't think, filtered down to the average range.
Does anybody know what that position was?
Mm. I think all this, those sorts of statements are available if the person wants to seek them out. I think I know that the LCA has statements on all those sorts of issues, war, peace, abortion, sex and marriage, all this kind of stuff.
Do you know the substance of any of them?
I don't know the substance on the one on abortion.
Anybody here know that? Well, that certainly does prove that the church hasn't done a good job of publicizing the religion.
I would like to say that in regard to community or in seeking those things out, the reason they seem to be not well publicized is because when a woman does face whether or not she'll have an abortion, when she becomes pregnant, when she cannot have the child, does not want the child, community is really not very high on her list of concerns at that time. And the concern for community seems real important when we're in a discussion like this. But when it is one woman pregnant, how any body stands on it, government, or church, or family, is really quite, I think, unimportant. And so whether those views are publicized or not, I don't think they really have much impact on the individual and whether that individual has an abortion.
I think they do have a lot of impact, even if you go against it, even if you disagree and decide to do something different. It's got to have an impact if you care about the group. And I think it's true that most women go through that kind of decision alone. I think that's also very true. It's true now because the communities do not give support. Because nobody knows what they're supposed to be supporting.
Well,
I think right now in our society it's true. You're left by yourself to make the decision. I don't think that has to be.
Well, I think that
I think it could be a point where community would be a very important thing if there was support there.
But you're then believing in support, which biases the decision.
Support does not have to bias the decision. It can be support for the person.
Yeah.
In their decision, whatever that comes to be.
Then, in fact, it's not important that the stand of the group is known.
May I enlarge the idea of that word support? When I used it to say communal support, I would stretch it in this sense. I would say, and when I'm, okay, I would prefer to define that as the Christian community for this moment. Let's even narrow it to the Lutheran community for this moment. I would say the support that I'm thinking of is the training that we as parents would give our children so that every single act of intercourse or conception is an act that carries with it tremendous impact. And that is not true in our world anymore. You know, it is not truly defined as that in our world at large. And we in the church do not tell our children that it is. you know. So that when I hear those in the 20 speaking, and I'm not sure what you're saying, but I often hear them discussing it on such a narrow basis. They have already leaped past and have accepted the idea. I'm talking about others, no one here in this room, other youngsters I know. They have already reached a point where it is acceptable, really, as a social pleasure in our world. You see, that's where my world and your world differs.
What is acceptable? What are you saying?
The act which will create, you know, by which conception takes place.
How?
The intercourse is accepted as a social pleasure. In that a social, by that I would say, not by everyone, but the impact on another generation by the acceptance of those in their 20s of it. I'm not judging against it. I'm just saying the difference is there. So that when I'm saying support, I don't think I'm saying the same thing you're saying. I'm saying support in the I at least, and I would consider it ideally, I would hope that my children would have the opportunity to use that primarily within marriage. I know that that is not true in this world, and it never has been, but I still think it an ideal worth striving for their own personal happiness. If they fail, you know, so what? We will help. But I would hope they'd be aware that that's an ideal. And I don't think it exists as an ideal any longer. Is that so? I'm asking you.
It could be. I think we are very much in a transitional stage where nobody can say what is and isn't. I think it's true that there's a lot of searching for values. I doubt if you would find very many young people in their 20s who could say very strongly, this is what I believe, this is what is right, this is what is valuable. They don't know. I think we're in a period of search, and it's going to take a while to work it all through.
I think it's a mistake to think that sexual intercourse did not happen outside of marriage or before marriage in your generation or years past.
Oh, I'm
in the
classes.
My point is that the world in the last 20 years has, people have opened up a lot more of this kind of talk. The church has accepted people talking about it. Before, it was not accepted to talk about. I mean, for me, 20 years old, to say sexual intercourse probably would have been a horrible thing. You know, it's talked about more, and so the issues come up about abortion or living together, etc., than it did for my parents and past. But in the class I took at school on the family, all these things have happened, but it's been very, it has not been discussed at all, and so it's been a very personal decision. Now there's pressure put on both ways, and like Kirsten was saying, you struggle with what your values are because now it's opened up and talked about. Before, it was just your family that was telling you what you should do, or just maybe the young man, or you know, whatever. There wasn't so many different ideas because you weren't exposed to that because it wasn't talked about.
I suspect you would be alarmed at the ignorance that most of us were married in my generation. You wouldn't believe it. You know, the contrast is so great. The one thing that really bothers me is this. I'm not condoning the ignorance that we grew up and were married in. It had its destructive aspects too, but I also think that it also is a very real part of our lives, that because we had oftentimes less opportunity for trouble was the reason we less often got into trouble. You know, if you understand what I'm trying to say. But what really disturbs me is this. While I think there were some very real problems with the way we were taught and brought up, and I'm not saying yours was worse, I personally think that the problems for you and the children that you in wedlock and out of wedlock at your time in life are bearing are worse. And I see this in the schools, even in working as an aide. You know, in our particular school, for instance, the teachers have made it implicit that they do not want to teach anything about it beyond the plumbing aspect. Well, that's the, you know, perhaps that's best. And then others will say that's the place of the church. Certainly our church hasn't yet touched it, you know. And then the school counselor will say to us, you know, who sees and talks to these children in very privileged conditions, she says, well, you know, you had better be aware, as parents who care for your children, that within your immediate neighborhood, because there are such a huge proportion of children unsupervised, that it follows, as night follows day, that there's a fantastic amount of experimentation going on. You know, so if I care what I teach my child, I had better do it instantly, and I'd better do it before he's even well into school. So what they're saying is that the guy, there's not only we were restricted. We didn't have any more guidelines than you did, but we were restricted and protected in a sense that we no longer are. But I don't really think you have any more guidelines than we had either. Because the schools aren't giving them the church. That's enough.
Well, I just wanted to know, we have had a couple of themes running through here in the last 5 or 6 comments, and about the appropriate context in which to reflect on the issue of abortion, connecting it back to changing mores and changing, almost as some of you over here have remarked, a kind of multiplication of options that people have today, which were even unthinkable in the past, that it seemed to follow more axiomatically in the past, due both to more primitive technologies and due also to a kind of cultural system, that one of the consequences of sexuality was procreation. And this followed like A followed from B. And that together with that was sentiment and affection. So sentiment and affection and sexuality and procreation were somehow together, interfused. Now we see in our own time a separation of sex from sentiment on the one hand and of sex from procreation on the other. That is, due to pills and IUDs and other methods of birth control, procreation is not followed from the sex act, and due to what people have argued about a kind of new casualness in sexual mores, it doesn't follow that sentiment does either, that it's bound up with sexuality in the same way. Now, what's intriguing, of course, is to figure out which came first and how the new technologies are related to the new values. What I want to know is whether or not this whole abortion thing, which is where we started, represents a continual a continuing cheapening of those things which were once held sacred and unquestionable, such as life, sexuality, and their interrelationships, and that we've become more casual about that too, in the same way we've become more casual about sexuality, or whether, as some others have suggested, this multiplication of options and these new, quote, freedoms has produced a new awesome sense of responsibility and almost a kind of a paralysis of choice in the face of all of these options that people have. And I'd just like to hear people's kind of responses to whether these new freedoms have become new burdens in the sense that they just confront us with more options than we can manage sensibly, or whether they resulted in a kind of continual debasement and cheapening and casualness of things that were once held unquestionably sacred in this whole process. So could we hear more kind of just remarks on one side or the other of that issue? Yeah.
As far as the cheapening aspect, perhaps we tend to, we have so many alternatives, it's hard to really understand what they all are and place a lot of value in all of them, but I tend to think the opposite, because if you want to create a loving situation, whether it's with other females or a communal type living situation with males and females who aren't married living in a house type situation, you've got to work to create that. The group of people can't, it's not like two people who are married because it's approved, smiled upon, set up a house, family. It becomes almost automatic. You're slipping into roles that are, there may be some struggles within, but it's a very easy role to play because it's so accepted and it's been done so many years. But if you're trying to create that kind of thing on the outside, so to speak, it's a lot harder and you have to have a lot more value for it in order to do it. So rather than cheapening, I think you have to have an even greater value for those things now to create them outside the marriage situation.
Response to that? Some of yes.
In our, I work with disturbed teenagers, and we are forced by our government, our state government. Every child, every girl who comes into care must be given a complete, not an education, but a complete resume of all of the contraceptive appliances or what have you, and taught how to use them, and encouraged to use them. Which, and every time one of these girls, and many on the pill, and these are 14, 15, 16-year-old girls, and when she comes to my office with those, what that means to me is I'm saying, fine, this is what you should be doing. And that doesn't, it certainly doesn't raise any values as far as I'm concerned. I feel very strongly that this is a wrong thing.
Janet?
No, there's a difference between what we're doing as Christians within the church and what we're doing for society as a whole. And I think if we have, I think to prevent the abortions is by far in society more a thing that I would be willing to say and do than to let the children, let those girls become pregnant and then have either, the whole mess. I really think that that's very important to give this information. I think that the use of contraceptives, to prevent, look, these girls are going to do what they've been doing anyway. And to prevent a child, another life to become involved, I think it outweighs, everything in terms of society and what's going on. I think I have the same kind of feeling toward the abortion laws. I was thankful they finally passed some kind of legal way for gals who were going to Colorado and who knows all over and being killed and everything else, finally having a safe way of doing what they're going to do anyway. And this doesn't have anything to say with what we do in the church. And I'd like to respond to why should we, of the older generation, be surprised that our sons and daughters are all of a sudden afraid of marriage? Look what's happening to our marriages. What kind of models are we giving? It's a mess. And, why should they marry and get in that kind of a mess when we can't do it? I have so many friends who are divorcing. One right after, as if as soon as you have a fight, you divorce now, And my generation is doing it. It's not the 20-year-olds that are doing it.
You stay in there and keep fighting.
Oh, we're the ones that are doing it.
Excuse me. I think that I really agree with what Jan is saying, because I teach in a high school and I have at least four teenage girls a year that come to me and are pregnant, and they're 14 and they're 15 and 16. And one girl came to me and thought that if she got an abortion, she would die. And everybody thinks, all these kids know, the ins and outs of their bodies and everything and what contraception, and they should know because that's available to them. They don't know, and they don't get it because they're afraid that someone's going to find out, and there's just such a lack of education. I would far rather see those those kids on pills. I would far rather see that than to see what I see every year, 15-year-old girls pregnant. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
What's kind of curious to me is that abortion in Minnesota is an issue where people are elected or not elected on that issue. It's become incredibly political, where the ERA will be passed or not passed on the issue of abortion in many states. And it's curious to me that we haven't had the kind of fights are ongoing in many other communities. Mm-hmm. And just in Minneapolis, where Planned Parenthood is, or St. Paul, where Planned Parenthood is burned to the ground. And we're just not reflecting that part of the culture at all. And that, I think that's kind of amazing.
I'm amazed too. I was a little, since you brought that up and made it easy for me to confess, I had some kind of trepidation about receiving this forum. I thought that now we're really going to, that's the reason I began my presentation saying, now I think we especially sensitive and hopefully, I figured that once I shut up, I mean, I thought this was going to be a minor fire compared to what would break out, but I mean, it is kind of, I must say, reassuring and a happy surprise that people are so genuinely attentive to one another's different perspectives and able to recognize that we're in the presence of great mysteries and ambiguities and owe each other the sorts of support that people have understood and defined support as, rather than categorical imperatives and clashing absolutes and so on. And I've been gratified and pleased by that. So I share your kind of being surprised. I hadn't expected that. You were going to say.
3 years ago, we sat in a forum, same format, same topic, and there was fireworks. We had opened the doors. It was a very heated issue, very polarized, both ends of the scale, very little middle ground.
Don't you think that we might be a little numb now?
Part of what concerns me.
It's interesting to figure out exactly what's happening.
What I'm hearing tonight is that under certain circumstances, yes, I think it's all right, abortion. My recollection of the position paper that was brought together by Mr. Burdens, Dr. Burdens, was that under certain circumstances, the church felt that abortion was acceptable for incest, health of the mother, and for rape. Beyond that, it's pretty much up to the individual. And that's what I'm hearing.
There's one touch of history that I want to go into very quickly as a response to your remark about no one can make this decision for you or should. The capsule of history is this. The French Revolution was a real revolution. By my definition, the American was not. We continued every one of the English values, just little twitchy things here and there. What the French Revolution did that was a real revolution was exactly in this area, where each person had the right to do what he pleased with his own body. The old Christian, both Protestant and Catholic, says you have no right to do with your own body as you please. You cannot be a homosexual. You cannot have an abortion. You cannot have a divorce. The strong hand of church and state welded together, reached in there to your lives and to your closets and to every part of your life and said it is the overall moral law and you do not have the right to these things. And the slogans of women was an impossibility before the French Revolution. We have the right to our own body. Here's a curious fact. America is now just like France. We have entered finally the democratic age. There's one area where we are not in a democratic age, where we're in a medieval age, we're in a Roman age, we're in a Greek age, we're in the age of Aquinas, and that is the government's armaments. I don't want to get off on that big subject, but we still arm in respect to Russia, as all empires and armies have done, and there's nothing you can do about it. The government feels that it has the absolute right to have these arms, to take your taxes and use them. And they are going to do that, whether it's Carter. Carter, of course, is a routine politician on these matters. You know, he promised to cut the budget, but he's increased it by about $6 billion. Kennedy, Johnson, and, you know, all, and anybody who will be one who will win next time will do the same. So we still continue the ancient world of the government has its right to defend itself, but in respect to your own body, we're in the democratic age of you have the right to do with your own body as you please, and the government cannot reach its hand in there and give it a half turn.
Jane, you were going to say something before we're cut off.
Oh, I was just, I hate to come down on what you're saying or interrupt what you're saying.
Oh, no, go ahead. Just, why does it interrupt us?
Just, I'd like to.
It's called, I'm conscious of
I just be real curious to hear from some of you men what comes to your mind immediately, anything you have to say about abortion.
Yep.
And I'm not asking for you to express an opinion either way, but just what comes to your mind, kind of, if you could speak as I did.
Some of the men who haven't spoken tonight yet, but got some backbenchers there who had their hand halfway up.
One small phrase that you probably know, if men had been pregnant over the centuries, abortion would now be a sacrament.
It's such a personal thing for me that it's almost a very selfish issue, and I'm just real curious what men think.
Yeah.
Whether they've been involved in situations or are totally appalled by it or frightened by the idea.
How would you feel if a woman wanted to abort your child?
I wouldn't be totally repelled by the idea. I would have to look at the conditions.
I think we've found the silent majority.
Well, I'd be curious. You know, I guess I have personal feelings, but I was kind of going to comment on Jan's comment and your comment that I think it sort of relates to the confusion of the whole, you know, the whole sort of morals, values, and all this kind of thing. You know, I guess I really see Jan's point about, you know, the contraceptives and yeah, I also see your viewpoint of saying that, you know, I may not agree with this. Where do I, you know, I don't want to set moral values for someone else, but do I want to be a part in you know, seeing that you know, maybe you're seeing that someone else has a right to their moral values, and maybe you feel guilty about, you know, handing out contraceptives or instructing people because you feel that that's wrong. You know, where do you come to a point where you say, okay, these are my values, and I don't want to push them on somebody else, but I don't want to be a part of somebody else's you know, judgments on that. You know, it's a real confusing thing. And, you know, does the church have anything to say about it? Does anybody have any standards to follow, or is it just, you know, I mean, I find it really confusing.
Sure.
I would like to respond to the statement that the church or the group, the churches aren't really helping this young woman who's become pregnant. I live about five blocks from a Salvation Army hospital, Booth Memorial Hospital in Chicago, where young women come from all over the country, including one from my own little denomination. You know, they have, I don't know how many, they've expanded it since I lived there. We lived there 20 years. Booth Memorial Hospital, Salvation Army helps them. They don't. They help them think about, I suppose, even think about whether they're going to give the child out for adoption.
for baby. You know that, don't you, about Salve? Don't you have another cities?
Mm-hmm. What is it?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids. St. Paul's. There's one church. I'm not a member of the Salvation Army.
Would anybody care to give us a last word kind of benediction to close? Because we're already over time here. And, some of you have something you've been really wanting to say all evening. That'd be a good time for it. Yes.
As one of the back row people, I'd like to say that I'm all for the abortion of conception. We have incest and rape, and where there are medical problems, I think everybody would go along with that. But I think it's a very much of a shame when you have children having children, and there are cases on Indian reservations and in the ghettos where 13-year-olds and the younger children are having children. And I think that the way to resolve the problem is perhaps through greater education in our schools of sex education, a greater education responsibility of the parents, and this type of thing.
Yeah,
it's a taboo subject, sex.
And
you
right.
don't talk to your children about sex until after they get into the problem. Mm-hmm.
I have one thing to say, old lady, you know, now. And I'm thinking about these young girls up in the balcony. I think what you feel as you get older is you hope they never have to face it. You hope that they, you know, if you've been lucky like myself and never had to face that thing, and I can certainly sympathize with this girl who said, you know, it's a part of you and you're losing it. And as you get older, and they can say what they want about marriage, is when you have a good marriage, you want them to have a good marriage. If they have, if you've never had to have an abortion is, I agree with her, something that you wouldn't want anybody to have, and so we don't want it for you. We want you to have the joys that come in, you know, having natural children. And believe me, there's nothing like a good marriage and a few good children, maybe five or six.